Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go.
Welcome to Saturday Frights, the podcast. I am your co-host, the projectionist. And now, for your host, Vic Sage.
Thank you, projectionist. And thank you, friends, for joining us once again for the Saturday Frights podcast. This week, we're going to be discussing what might very well be the best Tales from the Dark Side episode, the 7th episode of the first season, entitled Inside the Closet.
I will admit that this television episode even gave me something akin to the shivers, Sage.
Well, one of those reasons is not just a slow buildup of unease in regards to the mystery to just what is inside said closet, but we, the audience, are naturally privy to the danger to the main character in advance, which makes it even more suspenseful. Inside the Closet was originally broadcast in syndication on November 18th, 1984. Now, in my neck of the woods, Tales from the Dark Side was shown on Sunday nights, just after the 10 o'clock news, which was pretty nice. It normally gave me my jolt of fear before bed, and my friends and I would usually talk about the episode in the cafeteria at school the next day.
Instead of studying, you were staying up watching horror anthologies. I approve.
My homework had already been done, projectionist. Sometimes. Anyway, when the episode opens, we find ourselves in the Victorian-styled home of Dr. Fenner, who we're about to meet, and is played by Fritz Weaver.
Ah, I thought I had recognized him, Victor. From the Twilight Zone, the obsolete man radio broadcasts, yes?
Exactly. The third Saturday Frights podcast, in fact. Back on subject. As we are about to learn, Fenner is a doctor of veterinary medicine, and he also appears to have the last vacant room in town, which is a stroke of luck for fine arts student Gail Ansley, played by the beautiful Roberta Wise.
A stroke of luck. Bad luck in her case.
Well, Dr. Fenner seems to enjoy his quiet lifestyle, because he is quick to give Gail the list of rules if she plans on renting his spare room.
Term begins next week. I'm a graduate student in fine arts.
I'm dean of the veterinary school. There's a reason the room hasn't been rented yet. I'm a strict landlord. I do most of my work at home here. I write, I teach, I administrate, and I have to have quiet. So there's no television, no stereo, and no boyfriends trooping through at all hours of the night.
All I've got is my slide projector, and I promise not to run it late.
No boyfriends?
Me and my books.
Bookcases I have. Third floor, all to yourself.
One might think the aged professor was profiling a bit, eh?
Well, he's a doctor. And dean, in fact. Fenner certainly seems ill at ease in Gail's presence. Or maybe it's not the young woman that is making him jumpy. For example, when he's showing the room to Gail, he enters the room first, looking around the bedroom, almost as if he's expecting to find something. During the scene, we learn, thanks to a comment by the good doctor, that what he is doing isn't exactly legal.
Dr. Fenner's home isn't zoned for tenants.
Yep. When Gail makes a comment that she isn't a smoker, Dr. Fenner seems pleased by the news and drops his rather gruff attitude with her and knocks $35 off her rent. We also find out that the room Gail is going to be renting used to belong to Dr. Fenner's daughter. The young woman is quite taken with the room, and indeed, it's wonderfully quaint, but she can't help but notice that there is a small door, maybe 3 feet tall, opposite of the bed. Dr. Fenner seems to be all business again, quick to point out that it used to be a closet, but it's locked now and he's misplaced the key a long time ago, which is why he's installed a wardrobe close to the bed, so that she won't have to worry about where to store her clothes. He even offers to let her use the downstairs closet if it turns out she needs more space.
It is quite evident he considers the matter of the young woman leasing the spare bedroom settled, because as Gail Ansley is inspecting that closet door, asking why it's so small, the doctor leaves the room without further comment.
Fritz Weaver is, as always, great in his role, adding so much mystery to his character without saying anything most of the time, just by his body language. A strange smile here, or a furtive glance there. Later that same evening, while Gail is getting her things settled in her room, Dr. Finner is downstairs turning out the lights and comes across a box of books and kicks them across the room. It's very evident from his outburst and demeanor that he isn't thrilled at Gail staying upstairs. This, I feel, is an important character moment, and I'll bring up why just a bit later. Upstairs, we see that Gail has fallen asleep, thanks in part to the comfort of a nightlight, which allows us to get a good look at that peculiar-sized closet, and more importantly, the doorknob, as it slowly begins to turn one way and then the other. The next morning, as Dr. Finner is about to step out the door to head to his office, Gail reminds him that he hadn't yet given her keys to the house. The doctor still seems agitated at his new tenant, sighing as he tosses her a set of keys. Gail presses her landlord further by saying she thinks there's a rat in the closet, mentioning that it woke her up twice in the night with it scrabbling across the wooden floor behind the locked door. Dr. Finner is amused at her statement at first, replying that the only rats that one can find in his house are those he keeps stored in formaldehyde. But Gail very politely insists that she heard a rat, and Finner flashes her a very put-upon smile as he opens the front door, stating very matter-of-factly there are no rats in the house, and leaves before she can even offer a reply.
I doubt very much there are vermin in that house, Sage.
Yeah?
I'm sure that what is inside that bedroom closet would see such intruders as a delightful snack.
You may be right, projectionist. Gail, though, on a whim, decides to try the key to her bedroom on that closet door. And before you know it, well, nothing happens. The young woman turns the key in the lock and tries the doorknob, but it stays firmly shut.
Nothing happens, we should say, until that very evening. Gail Ansley has obtained a rat trap and is positioning it beside the closet door, when all by itself, the door swings open.
Gail looks inside the closet and finds absolutely nothing. Just a small space. No sign of rats or anything, but she moves the large trap into the closet nonetheless, and locks the closet door with her key. In the next scene, we see that Gail's using her slide projector, looking at the artwork of, I'm pretty sure it's Hieronymus Boss, when we hear the triggering of the rat trap. The young woman, who's seated at a small desk, turns on a table lamp, angling the shade so that she can see the closet. When Gail tries the door, however, it doesn't open. It will not budge, no matter how hard she twists the knob and pulls on it. Later that evening, after Gail has gone to sleep and the house is quiet, we see the doorknob start to turn on its own once more. Then the closet opens, and we are treated to a point-of-view shot from whatever is inside the closet. It dashes from the darkness of the closet, across the floor of the bedroom, past a chair, and under Gail's bed.
We should point out that you are given the briefest of glimpses at what resides in the closet as it rushes past the chair in the middle of the room, Sage. It is small, of course, barely 3 feet in height, and appears to be bipedal, pale as a corpse, and completely naked.
Indeed. Gail, sensing something, wakes up. Perhaps she heard the scrabbling of the thing as it darted across her bedroom floor. Turning on the table lamp, she realizes the closet door is open. She gets out of bed after grabbing a flashlight from under the pillow and approaches the closet. Bending down, she shines the flashlight's beam within and sees nothing out of the ordinary. It appears to just be an empty closet. Gail shuts the door, trying the doorknob and discovering that once again it is locked. She returns to bed. As she switches off her table lamp, though, and pulls her feet up, we, the viewers, witness that a pale and webbed hand, with sharp talons, lashes out at an ankle, just barely missing Gail's foot before she slides underneath the covers.
Yes, as Gail Ansley allows herself to once more slumber, we see two red, bloodshot eyes glaring out from underneath her bed.
The pupils in those red eyes, projectionist, are tiny. And we can certainly tell that whatever is hiding out at the moment under Gail's bed is inhuman. The next morning, Dr. Finner knocks on Gail's door, offering her a ride to campus. The young woman informs her landlord again that she believes there's a rat in her bedroom closet. And the doctor reacts with a, oh, this again look. But that expression changes as Gail explains she was able to get the closet door open.
You still want to ride to the campus? I'm leaving in 2 minutes.
There's a rat in that closet. I managed to get it open.
How?
The key to the door also fits the closet. I'll show you.
My daughter lost the key a long time ago. That door hasn't been opened in years.
I got it open last night and I put a rat trap inside.
What'd you catch?
Nothing. The trap disappeared.
Do you think the rat appropriated it to his own uses?
It must have moved the trap somewhere else.
Maybe the rat was raised on rutabagas.
Rutabagas?
Rutabagas are brain food. Rats may be smart enough to avoid a trap, but not smart enough to rearrange the furniture.
What's on the other side of that closet?
Attic space. But it's closed off. There's no way of getting to it.
Could be fumigated.
I'm going to be late. Ready?
Friends, this normally would bring us to the end of our synopsis, leaving you with the burning question of just how much Dr. Finner knows about the mystery of what lurks inside the closet.
But before we started this evening's broadcast, we agreed that for this particular television episode, we would discuss it in its entirety.
I'm going to take a quick break. I'm headed to level 7 to nab some popcorn, and I'll leave you with the projectionist and his fine offering of drive-in ads.
Thank you, Sage. Extra butter on mine, please.
Hello there. Give the demonstration of my new invention, the Goodies Machine. Special for patrons of this drive-in, the machine turns out delumptious hot doggies one after the other. Und thirst-quenching sodas also. Gives popcorn of the most tasty kind, plain and buttered. Candy, too, crunchy and dandy. Steaming hot coffee and ice cream, too. These goodies are at our snack bar, just waiting for you.
A new high in blood-curdling horror. Four blood-chilling shockers on one gigantic screen program. Mind Snapper number one. Bloodbath. Shrieking, mutilated victims caged in a black pit of horror. Bone Freezer number two. Queen of blood. Hideous beyond belief with an inhuman craving. Heartstopper number three. Blood of Dracula. In her eyes, desire. In her veins, the blood of a monster. Pulse Pounder number four. Bucket of blood. Your laugh will turn to shriek. Four fiendish, frenzied, fanatical, blood-draining killers on one gigantic screen program. Bloodorama. The movies that will give you nightmares forever. Bloodorama.
Okay. When we last left Gail, she accepted a ride from Dr. Finner to campus. We next find her returning home, going through her mail in her room, when the closet door swings open by itself. But there's a big difference this time. The closet is full of clothes and stuffed animals. The clothing looks to be dresses for a little girl. The young woman is rightly surprised by what she sees, and perhaps, reaching in to see how far it goes back, discovers a nasty surprise waiting.
The rat trap has been left for her probing fingers.
Thanks in no small part to Daniel 13, we've screened this episode for employees of The Retroist a couple of times. And every single time I hear that trap snap onto Gail's fingers, I jump a foot. As the young woman leaps up to wash the blood from her fingers in the small sink in her room, she turns back to see the closet door slam shut on its own. Gail looks on in fright, perhaps realizing that she has a bigger concern than a rat in the closet. That evening, when Dr. Finner returns home, the two take time to have a talk. We learn that the doctor's daughter is named Margaret. She lives in Vermont with her boyfriend, and the older man lets us peek behind his facade for just a moment, complaining to Gail that he paid for 4 years of college and two at graduate school to have his daughter simply paint houses for a living. We also learn that Mrs. Finner sadly died from cancer. And Weaver's performance in this scene is fantastic, putting on a brave face, so to speak, as he talks about the horrible disease in a very detached and clinical way. All the while, his actions become frantic as he uses a letter opener on his mail. Gail obviously feels bad about broaching the subject, but her fear is evident as she pleads to her landlord that there is something living in the closet.
You will notice she doesn't say it's a rat now.
That evening, as Gail lays in bed, pretending to be asleep, she hears that familiar sound of the closet door opening. She bolts upright and shines her flashlight at it. Getting out of bed, she turns the light off and crawls quietly on hands and knees to the open door.
Yes, perhaps expecting to see the closet full of stuffed toys and hanging clothes once more. As she switches the torch back on, she is confronted by the creature living in the closet.
Staring back at Gail in agitation is a thing of nightmares. Those red eyes we saw before are just the start. It has a rictus grin with razor-sharp teeth, a growl escaping its mouth at being caught. It is hairless, and as my co-host mentioned, it is pale. The creature pumps its arms in anger at the young woman, as if barely succeeding in holding back an attack. That is just for an instant, however, as Gail screams, and in slow motion we watch as the young woman tries to run away. The creature snarls and leaps onto her back, the sharp talons of its webbed hands and feet shredding Gail's back and shoulders. The young woman tries desperately to keep away from its snapping maw, but with superhuman strength, it grabs Gail by the head and heaves back. We hear a snap as they both fall back on the floor. Gail's neck has been broken, and we can only hope she's been killed instantly, because the last time we see her, she is looking up in wide-eyed horror, slowly being dragged into the closet by the creature, which emits what might be a croaking laughter as it slams the closet door shut. The next morning finds the closet open once again, and Dr. Finner on the phone downstairs speaking to Gail's mother. It seems that Mrs. Ansley is worried because she hasn't been able to reach her daughter by phone. Unbeknownst to Finner, a webbed hand shuts the bedroom door, and we watch as the creature slowly hops down the staircase towards the man. Dr. Finner explains to the woman that he hasn't seen Gail that day. He in fact had to leave for a meeting at 8 a.m., and he very much doubted the young woman was awake at that point. He says that when Gail gets settled in, he is sure she will call her mother to let her know everything is okay. As he hangs up the phone, he turns and lets loose an aggravated sigh before screaming in anguish. Looking down, we can see the creature is hugging his leg, its sharp talons pricking him. Dr. Finner reaches down and gently rubs its head.
Yeah, she's such a pretty little girl. Yes, you're so beautiful. You know what?
What? I don't know. What am I going to do with
I'm going to tell you a nice thing. We're just going to go upstairs, and I'm going to tuck you into bed, and I'm going to tell you a nice little story. Would you like that? You want to go upstairs? Oh, come on, I'll take you. Yes, give me a hug. Yes.
As you have probably already guessed, the creature is in fact Dr. Finner's daughter, Margaret. Now, this is why I pointed out his behavior earlier in the podcast. I think he is so put out with having Gail rent the room because he is so worried for both the young woman and what his daughter might do. Look how many times he tries to get Gail to forget about the closet.
So, you do not believe he does this often, Victor? To feed his child, perhaps?
No, not in the least. I think he's probably had successful tenants in the past, but they probably left the closet alone as he suggested. A previous incident led him to installing that wardrobe in the bedroom. It seems highly unlikely to me that if people kept disappearing who rented from him, that the police wouldn't somehow be involved. But in the end, this is a man who loves his daughter, and while I feel he knows she's a monster, he can't help but be protective of her.
So, am I correct in saying that you feel that perhaps Margaret would have left Gail alone if she hadn't been so insistent on opening the closet, and more importantly, leaving the rat trap?
Personally, yeah. I think if Gail wouldn't have bothered with the closet and hurt Margaret, things could have possibly turned out much different.
I don't know, Sage. I think I shall have to disagree with you on that statement.
Well, friends, I think that wraps up our synopsis for Inside the Closet. I want to add that if you're a fan of Tales from the Dark Side, you should visit The Retroist and listen to one of the latest podcasts, which is all about this great TV series. Metagirl even makes an appearance on the show, bringing us the top 5 episodes from the Tales from the Dark Side. I bet you can guess which number Inside the Closet ranks as. Just go to www.retroist.com, and on the main page, you can listen to the current podcast, or click on the Retroist Podcast or Podcast tab at the top of the screen for the Retroist Podcast archive page. The director of Inside the Closet was none other than legendary makeup effects artist Tom Savini. Besides having a hand in the effects for George A. Romero's Dawn of the Dead and Day of the Dead, he also worked with Romero and Stephen King on Creepshow. Savini has also taken a turn as actor, co-starring in the original Dawn of the Dead, From Dusk Till Dawn, 2004's remake of Dawn of the Dead, 2012's Django Unchained, just to name a few of the many hats he's worn. This episode was written by Michael McDowell, who would go on to write 6 episodes in total for the Tales from the Dark Side, including directing the episode entitled Seasons of Belief. He also wrote the screenplay for 1996 film adaptation for Stephen King's Thinner. Fritz Weaver has 136 acting credits to his name, and we talked about some of his highlights on the Obsolete Man episode. Recently, he could be seen in 2013's Muhammad Ali's Greatest Fight, in 2014's We'll Never Have Paris. Roberta Weiss has 33 acting credits to her name, with appearances in the superb adaptation of Stephen King's The Dead Zone, where she played one of the victims of a serial killer. She also had a 29-episode run in the NBC daytime soap Santa Barbara, as well as making appearances on Charles in Charge and Alfred Hitchcock Presents in the episode entitled Twist. Thank you all for listening to the Saturday Frights podcast. If you enjoy our show, you might want to hop on over to The Retroist every Saturday evening, where we present everything from classic Twilight Zone episodes to the best in horror shorts. The music you hear on the show was provided by Peachy. If you'd like to contact him, you may do so by sending him an email at peachy@retroist.com. That is peachy@retroist.com. Of course, I need to thank the projectionist for his invaluable feedback. Where might your fans find you online?
I am sometimes found on the Facebook. Projectionist Haunted Drive-In.
We have a Saturday Frights Facebook page as well. We would greatly appreciate it if you could stop by and give us a like. It's another spot we can share our love of retro horror with you, and not have to wait until Saturday to do so. Our podcast is available on iTunes as well as Stitcher. If you like the show, we would appreciate it if you might take the time and give us a review. Of course, I can be found almost every day on The Retroist. If you have any comments or suggestions for future shows, you may contact me at vicsage@retroist.com. We owe a big debt of gratitude to The Retroist himself, for not only allowing us to record here in The Retroist vault, but for hosting the podcast as well. If you have retro needs, and we all do, just head over to www.retroist.com for an easy fix. Until next time, the vault is sealed.
The dark side is always there, waiting for us to enter, waiting to enter us. Until next time, try to enjoy the daylight.
This has been a Retroist production. Goodbye.